our existence as human beings here on planet Earth. And then in the next lesson, I'd like us to think about really just kind of digging more into the actual ideas of who Jesus is and kind of being a little bit more just focusing completely on Him. So maybe if you wanted to say it this way, this first lesson will be the effect of Jesus on us, and the second lesson will be the identity of Jesus regardless of us. There will sort of be some interplay between those two concepts as we go, but that's sort of where we focus. So, yeah, it's on the right way, by the way. Good. This is always the awkward thing with the technology. You always mess it up. Okay, so before we really get started, let's look at something here. There we go. So I want us just to look at there's a neat little almost story in Isaiah chapters 7 through 9. But really it's the story that's portrayed all throughout the book of Isaiah and really all throughout the whole Bible. And there's sort of five parts. So the first part is, you know this part of the story. The people are sinful. We're going to see that here in just a second. And then people get scared, you know? Kind of like that kid who does something really bad, and then once he does it, he gets really scared about when his parents come home. You know, that's what we're like whenever we sin. The people become fearful. But then God, of course, offers salvation because He's a gracious and kind God and afraid about. But then we're stubborn and foolish, and so we reject God's help. And yet God, He doesn't quit. He doesn't give up. God promises a brighter future. Let me just kind of quickly show you a little bit about this in Isaiah chapter 7 through 9. Isaiah 7 comes right on the heels of Isaiah chapter 6, which is, I think you know, this grand description of Isaiah coming into the presence of God and seeing God and just this incredible moment that changed his life as he was, you know, I heard one person say that we call this the call of Isaiah, but perhaps it would be better to call it the conversion of Isaiah. This was the moment whenever he was awakened to the reality of who God is and what he needed to do in response to God is. So right after that, there's this description at the beginning of chapter 7 of not exactly a civil war because Israel and Judah had been divided at this point, but basically Israel is coming against Judah. And what you see is in verse 2, Israel had joined up with Syria or the Arameans, and it says in verse 2, when it was reported to the house of David saying, the Arameans have camped in Ephraim. In other words, they've come in to be with Israel. They're getting ready to attack. His heart and the hearts of his people shook as the trees of the forest shake with the wind. And that's not a good thing. They were terrified because of this sinful activity, you know, this conspiring, and they're coming against and all these bad things. And the people get scared. Now, the Lord sends Isaiah with his son, which is kind of interesting, to Ahaz, the king. And they talk about things and all this ordeal. And we'll get more into that in a minute. But then, you know, at the end of chapter 7, he goes on and keeps on describing how sinful they are. And all these kinds of things. But look at this. This is kind of interesting, right? God offers some help to them in verse 10. Then the Lord spoke to Ahaz, saying, ask a sign for yourself from the Lord your God. Make it deep as Sheol or high as heaven. In other words, ask anything, any sign that you want. But Ahaz said, I will not ask, nor will I test the Lord. He said, listen now, O house of David. Is it too slight a thing for you to try the patience of men? That you will try the patience of my God as well. You know, this is kind of funny to me because I think a lot of us would probably say, no, I don't need to ask for a test. I don't need to do any of that. You know, I'm not going to do that. God says, why didn't you just listen to me? I just told you what I want you to do and you wouldn't even listen. You're testing my patience now. You're rejecting the help that I'm trying to give you. I'm trying to give you some courage so that you can deal with this situation. But you won't even take it. In verse 14, there's this beautiful promise that's made. Therefore, the Lord Himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin will be with child and bear a son, and she will call his name Emmanuel. This is really what I want us to talk about tonight. This is quoted in the New Testament. And I think this is a beautiful idea that Matthew helps us understand a little more. Because you read there, okay, well, that's a nice name, Emmanuel. But the meaning of this is that God is with us. Isn't that really the question that we all have leads to our fears and our insecurities and our problems and everything like that? Is God with us or are we all alone? Is God with us or are we going to die? Is God with you? That's the real question that we have in all of our lives. Is God with us? And the promise God makes is yes, even though because of our sins, sometimes it doesn't look like that. In chapter 8, for instance, the Lord, in chapter 8, verse 1, says, "Take for yourself a large tablet and write on it in ordinary letters. Swift is the booty and speedy is the prey." Or your translation, and I'm going to mess it up, but this guy's dead, so I'm assuming he doesn't care how we pronounce his name. But it's Maher Shalal Hashbaz or something like that, right? By the way, you know, I'm thinking this is when that game was invented where kids just chase around one kid and push him down and stuff like that. You know, like that's what his name means. Is he's going to run fast, but we're going to catch him fast. You know, that's pretty much what his name meant. Right, so that's what you need to write. And I will take to myself faithful witnesses for testimony, verse 2. Uriah the priest and Zechariah the son of Berechiah. So I approached the prophetess, and she conceived and gave birth to the son. And the Lord said to me, "Name him Maher Shalal Hashbaz. For before the boy knows how to cry out, 'My father, my mother,' the wealth of Damascus and the spoil of Samaria will be carried away before the king of Assyria." So we see more of the stubbornness of the people and the problems that come because of their stubborn sinfulness. And yet, look a little bit further down. Look at what God says is going to happen, right? Verse 8. Then it will, he's talking about, you know, the punishment. They haven't trusted in God and all this, so this punishment is coming. Verse 8, then it will sweep on into Judah. It will overflow and pass through. It will reach even to the neck, and the spread of its wings will fill the breadth of your land. But then here's the weird part. Oh, Emmanuel. Well, that doesn't sound right. All kinds of bad things are happening, and yet it's included with this idea of, oh, Emmanuel, oh, God with us. Keep reading in verse 9. "Be broken, O peoples, and be shattered, and give ear, all remote places of the earth. Gird yourselves, yet be shattered. Gird yourselves, yet be shattered. Devise a plan, but it will be thwarted. State a proposal, but it will not stand. For God is with us." Tonight I want to talk about the idea of Emmanuel, God with us. Even with all the darkness and problems and bad things we bring on ourselves and other people bring on us and all the bad stuff, the picture painted here is that even through all that darkness, there shines a light. And that light is that our God is with us. So let's look a little bit more at this idea of Emmanuel. Let's look at some of the problems that are described here in Isaiah chapter 7. So look at chapter 7 and verse 1. We already touched on this a little bit. But you've got this idea of these warring, sort of conquering people who are coming in against the people, right? Verse 6 is kind of repeated in the same way. They say, "Let us go up against Judah and terrorize it, and make for ourselves a breach in its walls, and set up the son of Tabeel as king in the midst of it." That word just kind of scares us all the time now, right? Terror. And they had it back then. They had terrorists back in the Bible. And you know how that feels. You know that fear of being someone could do something crazy and wicked and bad at any moment and conquer me and defeat me and come against me. And they're planning it. And they're trying to do it. They're not just strapping bombs around their chest or coming with a sword, are they? People do that every day. The people they work with or people in their homes are all sorts of evil things. People are at war. And it's a problem that we have in our world today, right? So something else here that's described here in chapter 7 is part of the result of that. Verse 2, "It was when it was reported to the house of David, saying, 'The Arameans have camped in Ephraim,' his heart and the hearts of his people shook as the trees of the forest shake with the wind." And then look at verse 4, another description of their fear. He says to them, "Take care and be calm. Have no fear and do not be faint-hearted." In other words, stop being afraid. I know you already are, but you got to stop being scared about these problems that are coming. Look down at chapter 8. In verse 12, this is in that section where he's describing the fall of Damascus and Samaria. "You are not to say, 'It is a conspiracy,' in regard to all this people calling conspiracy. And you are not to fear what they fear or be in dread of." Because people get scared of all kinds of stuff. What are people, you know, do you know people who are afraid? Are you ever one of the people who are afraid? You know what I think, who I think are the scaredest people in the world are? All the people who do the news. You ever notice that? The world is always falling apart to them. All the time. Like the economy, we aren't going to eat, we're not going to have money, we're not going to have nothing. But then I'm looking, I'm like, well, you guys still have a job, and there's like 10 channels of you, so I think we're doing okay, you know? But there's this fear of what's going to happen, what's going to go wrong, right? So another problem that we see here, look at verse 9. Now put here, I just put doubt at first on the slide, then I switched that to this idea of wearisome doubt. And the weary is for us, sort of, but really, it wearies God. Look at verse 9 of Isaiah chapter 7. It says, "And the head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is the son of Remaliah. If you will not believe, you surely shall not last." If you doubt, you're not going to make it. You're going to get tired and you're going to give up. Look down at verse 13. This is that verse we read earlier. God says, is it not enough that you would try the patience of men? Your doubt is a burden to me. Your doubt is wearisome to me. It is to you and it is to me. You know what happens whenever two people get tired of being around each other? They stop being around each other. Right? If they're not faithful. Now, fortunately, we have a God who is very faithful, but unfortunately, we're not. And we get weary. And that relationship with Emmanuel is cut off. Another problem that we see of the people here in chapter 8 described sort of more in a little bit of a poetic way. Chapter 8 and verse 6 says, Inasmuch as these people have rejected the gently flowing waters of Shiloah and rejoiced in Rizm and the son of Remaliah. They've let go of those gentle flowing waters. In other words, the ones that sheep would want to drink from, you know, the ones that we need, the ones that are peaceful and calm and refreshing, we reject them. Think about how many times we reject the good things of God throughout our lives. People were doing it back then. Even though He's right there saying, "I want to save you, I want to help you," saying, "No, I'm good. I think I'm all right. I don't really need any of that stuff that you've got to offer." And that's a problem for us. And I'll tell you, you know, here's the big problem is, you know, we think, "Oh, we got all these problems, we got all this stuff going on. What should we do about it?" What do we do about it? You know, I guess a lot of times we end up medicating with TV or movies or books, or we spend a lot of time doing activities that give us pleasure, or we immerse ourselves in all sorts of activities with friends so that we think, "Well, that'll make all my problems go away. That'll fix everything." But that's actually a sin. And the way the Bible describes that sin, if I understand it correctly, is it describes it as sorcery. Look at chapter 8 and verse 19, and this is an example of what these people are doing. Chapter 8 and verse 19, it says, "When they say to you, 'Consult the mediums and the spiritists who whisper and mutter,' should not a people consult their God? Should they consult the dead on behalf of the living?" So the point here is, you people are inquiring of everything else to fix your problems, but you're not coming to me. So here's, you know, and I think if you look through the scriptures and all the descriptions of sorcery throughout the Bible, really, all sorcery is going after things that are not God to find the satisfaction, the fulfillment, the safety, whatever, that only God can provide. That's sorcery. It's not about, you know, brooms and stuff like that. That's not what sorcery is about. It's about seeking after things of the dead to satisfy the needs that only the living can provide. And that's what we do. In all these problems, we commit yet another sin. Pursuing these things. And there's some terrible results of all of these sins. Look at these things. Look at chapter 8 and verse 17. Chapter 8 and verse 17. It says, "And I will wait for the Lord who is hiding His face from the house of Jacob. I will even look eagerly for Him." You know, a lot of times throughout the prophets especially, God talks about this idea of turning His back and not His face to the people. And we even know that's not like some mystical, biblical phrase, right? You know what it means when you turn your back on somebody. You've done it. It's over. You hide your face. You won't even look at them. You know, if you ever make somebody mad, you know, your husband's ever done something really bad, you know, I have a gracious wife, fortunately. I've heard some rumors of that kind of stuff happening. I deserve that. And I think we all can say we deserve that. You know what happens whenever we're sinful? That's what we get. Because God can't have fellowship with us. He's the holy God who reigns in heaven. So He has to hide His face from us. He has to turn away. Because of all of our sins and all of our problems we brought on ourselves, He turns His face for us. And the result of that in verse 20 is this: "To the law and the testimony, if they do not speak according to this word, it is because they have no dawn." If you look on down to chapter 9 and in verse 2, it says, "The people who walk in darkness." Can you imagine what that would be like? You know, there's some places around the world that for a period of time, there's no sun, like for longer than, you know, the rest of it. You know what happens to those people, right? You get depressed because there's no dawn. And you look for the morning, but all there is darkness. And there's nothing, there's no light, there's no hope, there's no joy, there's just only this darkness. It just weighs on you, depressed. down on them continually. And that's what, because of our sin, that's what we bring on ourselves. There's no dawn, there's no light because of the sin that we've committed. And because God, the author of light, has turned His face away. You keep on going a little bit further in chapter 8 and verse 21. It says, they will pass through the land hardened and famished, and it will turn out that when they are hungry, they will be enraged and curse their king and their God as they face upward. You see just the pain here, this distress and this hunger. You go on and you see that they're just enraged. They're just angry. You know how that is whenever you're caught up in sin? It doesn't work, and as you keep on trying to make it work and it keeps on not working, you just get mad about it. And you're just enraged at everything. And you're cursing everything in sight because nothing's going right. Nothing's the way it should be. And you know that it shouldn't be this way. Yet we just keep on doing these things that distress us and leave us empty and famished. And it just continues. Chapter 8, verse 22 through chapter 9 and verse 1 describes this again in a little bit more vivid language. It says, then they will look to the earth and behold distress and darkness. You know, when God turns His face from you, can't look upon Him. And so, what else are you going to look at? This earth. And you find distress and darkness and the gloom of anguish, and they will be driven away into darkness. You see the picture? The people just keep, because of our sin, we just keep driven farther and farther and farther away, deeper into the darkness. But then at the beginning of chapter 9, it says, but there will be no more gloom for her who was in anguish. In earlier times, He treated the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali with contempt. But later on, He shall make it glorious by the way of the sea on the other side of the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. The deeper the people went into darkness, the worse it seemed. But actually, God had this plan that He was going to fix it all. And God makes some great promises to bring the people back to Himself. He makes some great promises about this one who was prophesied in chapter 7 and verse 14. This Emmanuel, the one who is God with us. He's come. We have all these terrible problems that have resulted in all these just horrible consequences. We're getting driven deeper into the darkness. It sort of takes you back to the Exodus language where the people were down in the wilderness being driven around, having to go through all this hardship. That's where we are, in darkness, in wilderness, totally bereft of anything good. God promises something good. Read with me in verse 2. The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. And those who live in a dark land, the light will shine on them. You shall multiply the nation. You shall increase their gladness. They will be glad in your presence, as with the gladness of harvest, as men rejoice when they divide the spoil. For you shall break the yoke of their burden and the staff on their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor, as at the battle of Midian. For every boot of the booted warrior in the battle tumult and cloak rolled in blood will be for burning, fuel for fire. For a child will be born to us. That child that we already talked about in chapter 7, Emmanuel. The child will be born to us. A son will be given to us. And the government will rest on His shoulders. And His name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, Prince of Peace. There will be no end to the increase of His government or of peace on the throne of David and over His kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it with justice and righteousness from then on and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will accomplish this. And that's such a great ending to the story. We just kind of stop right there for the night, right? All of this darkness, all this pain, all this evil, God says, I'm going to drive it out. You've done all these things. You've messed up every good thing that I've ever given you. But I'm going to fix it. And the way I'm going to fix it is the light's going to shine in the unlikeliest of places. The place that was, what does it say there in verse 1? The place that was dealt with contempt. In Galilee of the Gentiles. The place where nobody wants to go and nobody wants to be. And where nothing good comes out. God's going to bring something good. I mean, that's a good lesson for us. Whenever we get to a place where we think nothing good can come out, God can bring something good through Emmanuel, God with us. And He promises all sorts of great things, right? He promises a light for these people who are stuck in darkness. He promises, and I like this, this was one, you know, these are one of these passages that you've read 10 million times, you know, but then you read it, you know, oh, that's kind of cool, I didn't see that before. And this was one that just kind of missed a lot. Verse 3, you shall multiply the nation. You're not going to get smaller. You're not going to be defeated. You're not going to be broken. God says, I will multiply the nation. I'm going to enlarge you and make you greater than what you were. And with that multiplication, joy will be increased. And notice how big of a deal joy is to God. Look at verse 3. Increase their gladness. They will be glad in your presence, in Emmanuel's presence, God with us. As with the gladness of harvest. In other words, I mean, think about, I don't know if you guys have gardens, but I know a lot of friends who have lots of big gardens. And they're just so excited about it, you know. They won't stop talking about it, you know. They'll just tell you that their okra that came in that day. Oh, well, that's good, I guess, you know, whatever, that's good, let me have some, you know. But I mean, they're just talking about it because there's this joy of harvest, that good things are coming out of all this work that I've put in, all this effort. There's a harvest coming. So there's this third reference to joy, and then again a fourth reference. The third verse, four references to this idea of joy and gladness. That's what God wants to bring into our lives, is this joy that will be increased. And not only that, but in verses 4 and 5, there's not going to be war anymore. I mean, he's been taught war. Chapter 7 and 8 is all about war and prey and, you know, swift to the spoil, all that kind of stuff. That's done. The bloody cloaks, burn them. Throw your boots away. You don't need them anymore, because now there's a time of peace that's being brought about by Emmanuel. And this is not going to stop, because this kingdom is going to last forever, as verse 7 describes it. And I like the way it's described there in verse 7. It's an eternal kingdom, both in length, but also in terms of its expansiveness, right? There will be no end to the increase of His government. So it's not just going to be this, okay, the government got set, it's just going to go for a long time. It got set, and it's going to just grow and grow and grow and keep on going and getting bigger forever. That's the kingdom that's happening here. So all these bad things, all this darkness and gloom and pain and sin and rage and fear and all that stuff, forget about it. Because Emmanuel has come. God is with us. He's come. And we need to know Him. I think there's three kind of big descriptions that are given here. One is, He's a teacher. He's described as wonderful. And this is kind of a weird thing. We don't call Jesus the Father very often, but isn't that what the Scripture calls Him here? Eternal Father. And I don't think that's the point of parentage necessarily, but I think the idea here is that He is a counselor. He's someone who looks out for us, and like a father, counsels us and helps us as we go through life. And isn't that exactly what Jesus did? He came as a teacher. He came and even said, my business here is to teach people, to show people the light, to testify of the truth. And that's who Jesus is for us. Not only that, though, He's not just a teacher, because teachers are nice, but at the end of the day, you can take or leave whatever they say, right? You know, I mean, you can sit in class, and if you don't like what they say, you can just ignore it. Go home and do your thing. And you get an F, but I mean, whatever. It's not even good. But for a ruler, it's a different ballgame when a ruler tells you something. When a ruler tells you something, you've got to do it. When a king tells you something, you have to obey. And that's what Emmanuel is. He's come not only to teach us things, but to rule over us. But His rule is not a scary rule, because I think rulers are automatically scary. Isn't that pretty much what this country was completely built on? Being scared of rulers? You know, we had a whole war because we got scared of some guy who was a king in another country. That's a little bit of a problem for us as Christians, by the way, if we let the mentality of this country get in our head. Because we have a king who lives in a different country. So you just got to get used to that if you're going to be a Christian. That's the way it works. But we don't like that here. And I think rightly so, with human kings. Because human kings are selfish, and they take advantage of the people, and they're evil, and all those things. But not our king. Because He's not a prince of war, or being opportunistic, or anything like that. He's a prince of peace. He's a ruler like David. And you remember David. David was the one who sat in a cave running for his life, and he allowed all those who were distressed and dispirited and in debt to come to him. And he treated them like a good shepherd would treat his sheep. And Emmanuel came and was the complete fulfillment of David as the Prince of Peace. But then also, not only that, he's not just a ruler, you know, because rulers are nice, but eventually a ruler dies and you get a new one. So if I trust this one, what about the next one, you know? Not this one. The way that He can be His ruler forever and ever is because He is the mighty God, the eternal Father. He's going to keep on going and going and going. And it's these three things that I think really make these promises matter, right? So there's the idea of Him being a teacher. That's how we have life. Isn't that what John talked about whenever he talked about Jesus? Is that He comes as the true light into the world to enlighten every man. But not only that, as a ruler, He brings us this restful peace. promise that Jesus made of all you who are weary and heavy laden, come to me, take my yoke upon you. In other words, let me rule your life. Let me take control. Let me lead you so that you can have this peace that will endure forever. And whenever he said at the end, all authority has been given to me. Go out there and be a part of my kingdom and bring more people into my kingdom. We know he can because he's the Prince of Peace, the one who sits on David's throne. And since he's God, that's how I can believe that he can multiply a nation. Because you know, men can't do that. Men can't create a men. It doesn't work. People try to, and people try to figure out how to. But we can't. We can multiply a lot of stuff. But we can't just create people.
God can bring up
a new creation to the point that all things have been made new. He can extend the border of his kingdom by his power, his might. Even using people like us, right? People who just mess it up every time. God can. Emmanuel can. Because he is God of all. The only light that we see here to rescue us from this darkness that we brought ourselves into is Emmanuel. And that's exactly the point here in these first couple of verses in chapter 9. As we're being brought from darkness into light, is that God is the one who does that. The child who was born to us, Emmanuel, God with us, he's the one who brings light into darkness and who rescues us from it. And I love the descriptions here. There will be no gloom. None. I mean, even on the sunniest of days, isn't there something gloomy in your life? Something? I don't know, maybe not. But I'm guessing for most of us, there is. But for the people who are with God, it's just, that's not how it works. You walk in light, and you are in light. That's how it always is. Flip back in Isaiah chapter 2. Let's just quickly jump through a couple passages in the book of Isaiah to note the light that the people see and are a part of. Isaiah chapter 2, beginning in verse 1. This is sort of interesting because it's the first hopeful passage in Isaiah. Chapter 1 is pretty much a downer. It's just all about how evil the people are, how terrible the people they are. And it says in verse 1 of Isaiah 2, it says, the word which Isaiah the son of Amoz saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now it will come about that in the last days the mountain of the house of the Lord will be established as the chief of the mountains and will be raised above the hills. And all the nations will stream to it. Many peoples will come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us concerning his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. For the law will go forth from Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And he will judge between the nations, and will render decisions for many peoples. And they will hammer their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift up sword against nation, and never again will they learn war. Isn't this sort of just another description of what we read in chapter 9? There's peace here, there's his kingdom here, there's God. And here he's not, well, he's sort of described almost as the owner of a house, the master over the house. And he's opened up this invitation for people to come to him. Notice it's only the people who are willing to be sort of awkward in the world. They don't stream down away from the mountain, they stream to the mountain, toward the more difficult path, right? And these people walk with God. But what's the result? What's the point? What's the invitation, really? Look in verse 5. Come, house of Jacob, and let us walk in the light of the Lord. Come, sit in God's house. Be a part of his family. Be in his home and find the light in the mountain of the house of the Lord. Find the light in the Lord's house. Here, listen to him and learn from him. You know, I think about that day whenever Jesus sat down on the mountain. Remember that? And people came, his disciples came, and he sat down and he taught them. That must have been a pretty amazing day, right? And I wonder if anybody walked away and thought, yeah, this is kind of like Isaiah 2, you know? And we came up to the mount and listened to this one. I think he may be Emmanuel, because he tells us he's enlightening us in ways that we would have never thought possible. Now that's what Jesus came to do. To bring us the light, to teach us his ways so that we could walk in his ways and learn to be like him and learn to be with him. If you flip over a few pages to Isaiah chapter 30, Isaiah 30, a similar passage describing light in the Lord. And again, it's also a similar passage because it's really a downer section. It's all about how bad and evil the people are. It's a very dark section of Scripture that talks about you've done this bad thing and you've been evil in this way, you've just been horrible in so many different ways. Read in verse 18. It says, therefore, the Lord longs to be gracious to you. God doesn't want you to be in darkness anymore, in other words. And therefore, He waits on high to have compassion on you. Can you picture God sitting up on His mountain, in His house on the mountain, looking down at these people who are dwelling in darkness, and He's longing to draw them out of that, to bring them to the light. He longs to do that. For the Lord is the God of justice. How blessed are all those who long for Him. O people of Zion, inhabitant of Jerusalem, you will weep no longer. No more rage, no more crying, no more fears. He will surely be gracious to you at the sound of your cry. When He hears you, He will answer you. Although the Lord has given you the bread of privation and water of oppression, He, your teacher, will no longer oppress you. But your eyes will behold your teacher. Your ears will hear a word behind you. This is the way. Walk in it. You know exactly what he's talking about in Isaiah 2. This is the way. These are the paths. Walk in them. And look at the way this is described. If you go a little bit further down, look at verse 25. On every lofty mountain, on every high hill, there will be streams running with water on the day of the great slaughter, when the towers fall. The light of the moon will be as the light of the sun. Imagine what that would be like. And the light of the sun will be seven times brighter, like the light of 7 days, on the day the Lord binds up the fracture of His people, heals the bruise He has inflicted. Now, God has brought a lot of this pain, a lot of these bad things, to help us to want Him more so that He could be gracious to us, so that He could heal us. Now, I really, really want to go back to this image of the light of the moon and the light of the sun. So what would that be like, right? Imagine that in a few hours the sun goes down and the moon shone as the light of the sun. What would happen? You know, there wouldn't be any more if that happened. No more darkness. And imagine even more if the light of the sun shone seven times brighter than normal. I mean, there wouldn't even be any shade. You know what I mean? It would be a total change of everything. And the only way that's possible in our lives for us to escape the darkness, as it's talked about in Romans chapter 13, to come out of the darkness, to put off those deeds of darkness, and to arm ourselves with the armor of light. The only way that can happen is in the grace of God and the healing that He brings. Now, we try to fix it in our own ways. We try to fix it with things of this world. But this passage teaches us God is the only solution. Your teacher is the only solution. The one who can bring light out of darkness is the only solution. So stop looking for everything else. Think about even whenever Jesus was on earth. We just ignored Him. Everybody did. You know, except for the few smart people who everybody else thought were fools. Everybody just ignored Him. They didn't realize that God is with them. And so often we don't realize that God is and wants to be with us. He wants us to be in His house. He wants to be our healer. And yet so often we just ignore Him. Just like so many people did in so many instances of Jesus. You just walk away. Think about that guy who had all the money and all the power in town. And he was a really religious person, was in the prime of his life. You remember Jesus told him, He said, you lack one thing. You know, I don't think the one thing he was lacking was that he was rich. I don't think that. He wasn't lacking there. He had lots of that. What he was lacking was Jesus. That was the one thing he was lacking. And his money was the one thing that stood between him and Jesus. But Jesus was the one thing that he needed. And he did just like we do so often. He walked away. And he stayed in darkness. And I sure hope he repented. I hope he was one of those guys who sold his land and gave it to people who were in need. I hope so. I don't know. But you know, so many of us, we never repent. And we just keep on walking in darkness. And we never listen to the one who brought God's covenant to mankind. Look at chapter 42. You know, this healing could only happen if God establishes a covenant with His people. Isaiah 42 and verse 6 says, I am Jehovah, I have called you in righteousness. I will also hold you by the hand and watch over you. And I will appoint you, and this is speaking to the Messiah, to the servant that God would send. I will appoint you as a covenant to the people. Here we go again. As a light to the nations. To open blind eyes, to bring out prisoners from the dungeon, and those who dwell in darkness from the prison. Look at verse 16 of the same chapter, Isaiah 42 and verse 16. It says, I will lead the blind by a way they do not know. In paths they do not know, I will guide them. I will make darkness into light before them. and rugged places into plains. These are the things I will do, and I will not leave them undone. They will be turned back and be utterly put to shame who trust in idols, who say to molten images, you are our gods. You know, the only light that we can find, the only thing that will break us out of the darkness is the covenant servant, Jesus Christ. And having Him in our lives. That's why Jesus said, if you can't eat my flesh and drink my blood, just get out of here. This is what it's going to take. You've got to become a part of me because I'm the only one who can bring light into your world. And yet so many of us bow down to idols of this world. God says, I can't be part of that. Because I'm the light. And me being with you and you being with me, that's the only way we can find the light. So I wonder, before we get into our last little thing, just take a couple more minutes, but I wonder how we're doing with this. I wonder how we're doing with letting God shine His light in all the dark places, in our speech, in our home life, in our entertainment choices, in our business decisions, in the way we think, in the way we talk, in the way we behave as Christians together, and all these things. Are we letting God be the light that drives the darkness away? Or do we like to keep kind of one foot in the darkness and one in the light? It doesn't work like that. It can't work like that. We've got to choose. If we're going to let His light drive out the darkness, or if we're going to be driven deeper and deeper into the darkness of this world, and the only solution is to let Him come in. To let Jesus Christ take over. That's what He wants to do. That's what He was born to be. He was born to be Emmanuel. God with us. Now sometimes, you ever wonder why this is such a big deal? You know, I wonder, why didn't God just give us some things to do and then zap us to heaven? You know? I always thought that as a kid. Like, why don't Christians get teleported into heaven right after they get baptized, you know? Because after you get baptized, everybody always says this too. It's like, we got baptized, but you know, clock's ticking when you're going to sin the next time. You know, that's kind of the idea. So I always thought, why doesn't God just? Because then you're in risk of keeping on sinning and falling away, and that's bad, and all these kinds of things. So I just thought to heaven. So I guess maybe, well, it wasn't a thought, I had it on the job, but maybe now that would be a childish thought. But I don't know. Would that make sense a lot? I think the reason that doesn't make sense is because God has a greater and grander vision for us than just simply to get saved. You know, God being with us even now is really important. But not for us, necessarily. It is important for us, but not just for us. Look at Isaiah chapter 60, or chapter 58, excuse me. Isaiah 58. You know, if we would let God come in and reign in our lives, then we can be a people of light to this world. And isn't that what Jesus said we're supposed to do after all? In following Him, we share in His work of illuminating the darkness and bringing light out of the darkness. And that's really the picture that we have here. Look in Isaiah chapter 58 and verse 8. Do y'all know that? I watched the movie or read the book. Do y'all know that movie Breaking Dawn? You guys heard of that or seen a poster or whatever? So this is the true Breaking Dawn. Okay, Isaiah 58. So anytime somebody asks you about Breaking Dawn, this is it. So you have no idea what I'm talking about. That's fine. All right, so verse 8. Then your light will break out like the dawn, and your recovery will speedily spring forth, and your righteousness will go before you. These people who repent, turn away from their selfish, sinful ways and turn back to God. This is what's going to happen. The glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. His face isn't turned away anymore. God is hearing these people and their prayers. You will cry, and He will say, here I am. If you remove the yoke from your midst and the pointing of the finger and speaking of wickedness, and if you give yourself to the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then your light will rise in darkness and your gloom will become like midday. And the Lord will continually guide you and satisfy your desire in scorched places and give strength to your bones, and you will be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. Those from among you will rebuild the ancient ruins. You will stand up the age-old foundations, and you will be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the streets in which they dwell. Isn't that an awesome picture? that for those who would turn back, to let God be with them and to be with God, something's going to change. And there will be light in the darkness once again. You know, that was God's plan. In all the darkness and sin of this world for centuries and ages, He sent His Son in to be the light of the world. But then His Son left. But the light did not leave. Because God is with us. And in every generation, God has placed people in this world so that the light of Jesus Christ could shine through us. So that people could come to believe in Emmanuel that yes, God is with us. And you know how people can know that? It's through the character of His people. That's when their light will break forth like the dawn. Do you notice that? He says, look, you've got to remove the yoke. Stop being oppressive. And maybe you're not putting a yoke on you, but I don't know. Maybe some of you guys own business. Maybe you are. I don't know. But maybe you're not. Maybe you're not exactly doing that. What about the way you treat people? Remember what fathers were told not to do? Don't cause your children to have wrath in the way you treat them. Think about us and our relationships as Christians. How are we supposed to be? We're supposed to be harmonious and gentle and kind to each other. And yet so often we just want to start slapping yokes around everybody's necks. You know? Stop that. Let people see my light in the way that you treat one another in your families and in your churches so that my light can shine in this dark world. Because people need the light of the Lord. People need His grace, His teaching, His rescue, His covenant that He's offered through Jesus. They need to know about it. And that's why He's put us here. That's why He left us here. Is so that we could shine that light. You go on and He talks about the pointing of the finger and speaking wickedness. Stop using your lips for evil and use them for good. Isn't that what Ephesians chapter 4 says? Stop speaking evil. Stop speaking things that tear down one another. Speak things that build up and edify. Because your job is to build up. Isn't that what it says there in verse 12? Those from among you, we will rebuild the ancient ruins. And you would probably get shot if you tried to do this, but imagine if there was some repair crew that went into the Colosseum in Rome to rebuild the ancient ruins, to make it in its glory that it once was. Like I said, most people probably wouldn't be in favor of that. You try to don't, but get the picture, right? What if you could? What if you could take it back to its original glory? You know what God says? I put you here to let me work with you. So that we could rebuild the ancient ruins together. And that's why your character has to be the character of my Son. That's why you have to be the light of the world. Just like Jesus was. And that's why He's done all the things that He's done. And if we will have this character, then the influence will be profound. Chapter 60 of Isaiah. Isaiah 60. If we'll live like God wants us to, we'll live like God is with us, like Jesus is in us. Then Isaiah chapter 60 and verse 1 says, arise, shine, for your light has come. By the way, this is quoted in Ephesians chapter 5. I want to check that out later. And the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. You know, you see a picture? Wake up! It's morning time. The light has come. Jesus has come. You need to stop sleeping in darkness of this world. Wake up! For behold, the darkness will cover the earth. And deep darkness, the peoples, if you know that. Because you look around your neighbors and your families and your co-workers and everybody around you, and you see this darkness that just covers people. And all that rage and fear and doubt and frustration and all those bad things we talked about at the beginning, that's a reality in our world and in every generation throughout the world, always. But in verse 3 it says, end of verse 2 it says, but even in the midst of all that darkness, but the Lord will rise upon you and His glory will appear upon you. Nations will come to your light and kings to the brightness of your rising. Lift up your eyes round about and see. They all gather together. They come to you. Your sons will come from afar and your daughters will be carried in their arms. Then you will see, be radiant, and your heart will thrill and rejoice because the abundance of the sea will be turned to you, the wealth of nations. Come to you. You know, the picture that I see here in this text is it kind of calls back images from all the way back to the beginning in Isaiah 2. If we come up to the mountain of the house of the Lord, if we sit at His feet and listen to His teaching, and if we let our teacher heal us and bind up the broken wounds and by His grace change us as we walk in His paths, And if we form this intense covenant bond and we become a part of His family and dwell in His house, then one day maybe we'll wake up. Maybe we'll wake up and see the light of the Lord that's shining from us. Because as you look out of the darkness, if you look down from Zion, you start seeing people coming out of the darkness and they're being drawn. You realize it's in your direction. But you're not anything special, are you? None of you guys are. None of us are. And yet something's happening. You know why? Emmanuel. God with us. And if we would let Him be with us and in us, and if we would truly be with Him, then we could change our worlds. The world that we're a part of could see His light. You know, a lot of people are just going to stay in the darkness, and the light will actually drive them even deeper into the darkness. And we can't change that. It's just the way it goes. Man, we've got to try as hard as we can to cut that number down to as few as possible. To shine the light of the Lord so the people will be drawn to Him. And not only so that we have benefit to others, but so that we will see and be radiant, verse 5 says. You need to radiate the glory of God in the way He lives so that your influence will be this profound. Look in verse 19. It says, no longer will you have the sun for light by day, nor for brightness will the moon give you light. But you will have the Lord for an everlasting light, and your God for your glory. Your sun will no longer set, nor will your moon wane, for you will have the Lord for an everlasting light, and the days of your mourning will be over. And all your people will be righteous. They will possess the land forever, the branch of my planting, the work of my hands, that I may be glorified. The smallest one will become a clan, and the least one a mighty nation. I, Jehovah, will hasten it in its time. You know, if you read Isaiah chapter 60, it actually sounds really similar to the last couple chapters in the Bible. You know why those chapters are so special? Look at Revelation chapter 22 with me. All these great things about this profound influence and all these things, what's it really all about? What's the point? What makes us able to do these things, to have this kind of character, to have this kind of influence, and to be world changers and all these great things? How is it God's dream of a people on earth to shine His light? How is it that it can be possible? You know, I think the promise that's made in Revelation chapter 22 is one that's made a lot throughout Scripture, but it's just described better here. It's kind of this vision at the end of this book is painted. Verse 3, it says, there will no longer be any curse, and the throne of God and of the Lamb will be in this new Jerusalem. And His bondservants will serve Him. The Lamb's servants, Jesus' servants, Emmanuel's servants, you and me, will serve Him. And they will see His face. That face that got turned away because of our sin, He turns His face back. He shines His light on us. As our Emmanuel, God with us. So I wonder if you're letting Him do it in you, and letting Him take over your life.
Also,
so that we could walk in the light of the Lord. So that we would accomplish Jesus' purpose for us. That we would let our light shine before others. So that they would glorify. So I guess that's the question. Am I living like Emmanuel? Am I living like God is with me? So that through me, God can light up the world. I hope so. I hope